hello, everybody, and welcome to A Medic's Mind, the podcast. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it. Hope you're all doing well. I'm doing okay. It's been a bit of a busy day. I had a meeting today with my occupational therapist. It's somebody that the Veteran Affairs has given me to, I guess, from my basic conceptual understanding of what this is essentially to break me out of sort of lulls and into, stretch my comfort zone a little bit, maybe test me, get me into different social settings, motivate me to kind of gain some more normalcy in my routine, in my daily life. And I think that that's kind of what this is supposed to be about. Not sure what that looks like long term. Maybe I'll have a better idea in a few months. But I met with her today, and that was it was a good meeting. Seems like she knows what she's doing, and this is not her first kick at the can with this sort of stuff. After my meeting with her, I got a text message from a friend of mine, and he wanted to get together and meet for coffee. So I was like, yeah, let's do that. And he's a good friend of mine. He's a first responder as well. Fellow first responder, and he is a firefighter. So let's try not to hold that against him. I'm kidding, buddy. But yeah, we met up at this lovely little bar restaurant in my neighborhood, and really, it's a great place. I haven't gone there too often, only a couple of times. But the food is really good. The environment's really nice. And the waitress, oh my goodness. So coincidentally enough, our waitress's name was Maya. And I'm not sure if you heard my previous podcast about Maya, but if you haven't, go back and listen. And if you have, you'll know that Maya was once the object of my desire in grade 5 or grade 4, something like that. Anyway, this Maya was, is equally as stunning, if not more so. Very beautiful young woman, and very pleasant, super nice to be around and put up with our shenanigans. So kudos to her for that. It was great. Meeting up with him was awesome, because there's a thing that happens when you meet up with a fellow first responder. There's an instant connection. You know, even if you meet a stranger and you find out they're a first responder, and you have that initial conversation with them, and you, once you find out you have one thing in common, and it just spawns from there. It's like meeting a new partner in the front of the truck for the first time. And then you have that initial feel out phase, and then all of a sudden you're best friends. So with this guy, it's like that. We get together, we talk about shop, we shop talk. And he's actively working still, and he's actually going through to become an acting fire captain. So good for him. Hopefully all goes well. So if you're listening to this, buddy, I wish you the best. Hopefully everything goes well for you, and you can get in that position that you so deserve. But yeah, it was great. We talked. So he was telling me about his week and some of the things he's been to. And of course, I have to rely on experience to retort on things that I've been to. And there's so many similarities when you talk to, because the job is pretty universal. I think I could go to any place in the world, talk to a first responder, and have shared stories, common stories. And the great thing about conversing with a first responder or a fellow first responder is that you don't really have to tailor anything that you talk about. And what I mean is, like, people will often ask, what the worst thing you've ever seen is. And people ask me that all the time. People that are not in the industry, people that are not first responders. And I never tell them, because they really don't want to know. They think that they want to know, but they really do not want to know. So you have to tailor the things you say. Or when people say, tell me some funny stories, you also have to tailor what you say, because sometimes things are subjectively funny to those of us that possess a first responder's brain, and they do not relate well to the muggle's brain. And I'm not saying that in an elitist mindset. At least I do not mean it as such. It's just there is a difference in things that we can comprehend about one another. So when I'm with this guy, with another first, it's great because we can just completely naked talk. And it's, you know, you don't have to sugarcoat anything. You don't have to edit anything. Literally, the only other place that I can talk as raw as I do with a fellow first responder is in therapy. You know, even on here, I tailor and sort of kind of edit what I say. And I know that sounds surprising with my prolific use of the C word. but, you know, I do, because I don't want this to be trauma porn, which my earlier writing, when I first started kind of getting into the writing thing as an outlet of therapy, it really was kind of trauma porn. It was just basically, look what I've been through. I'm fucking angry at the world. And these are the reasons why this world is bullshit. And I'm lamenting. And look, see, this is why, this is it, you know, and I don't want it to be that. And, you know, I approach things differently now because I'm looking at things differently, definitely from a different area of my brain. The clarity of soberness. Oh my God. The clarity of soberness has really taught me so many things. The clarity of sobriety has taught me so many different things. With respect to how I can approach and look at things. The biggest thing I think I have right now, I still don't like myself. That's not a thing yet. They tell me it's going to come, but I, you know, let's agree to disagree at this point. But the one thing that I have gained is patience. I'm a little more patient with myself. When I have flashbacks out in the public, when I have nightmares, when I have those sleepless nights, when I have those, you know, those sensory overloads from seeing a fire truck or an ambulance going by, lights and sirens, or a sudden startle reaction, I don't instantly go into self-loathing and lament anymore. It's not an automatic reaction. Those aspects of self-loathing and hate are still there, but there's also another voice. A more patient voice, a kinder voice, a different narrative that I'm able to listen to that I wasn't able to listen to before. So, you know, I approach things differently. But it's really nice to be able to sit down with somebody that can kind of get that anger, get that frustration, that can get why you feel the way that you do about certain things. You know, so he was talking about his week and you know, and he would tell me one story and I instantly related to it. The story that I told him was that there was an instance back when I was working where we got called for an obvious death. It came across as, our call code was 9 Bravo. That stood for obvious death. Basically, somebody has died at home and it's deemed obvious, but we still need to go and confirm anyway. So we showed up. And it was a very busy day in the city, which it often is. It's a city. So police could not arrive anytime soon. So we showed up on scene. We go into the bedroom where the deceased was. And sure enough, yes, this person is has expired. They are definitely deceased. Nothing we can do. So I retreat back into the living room and I inform the family member on scene of what has happened. And then they kind of break down and they're emotional as per. And then this person starts making phone calls to other family members. And we can't just leave. We have to wait for police to come because now the police need to take control of the scene, wait for coroners to come and set up victim services. Basically, it's a long thing, right? You don't just show up and say, yep, they're dead, and then leave. It doesn't work that way. So we're on scene waiting for the police to arrive, and we know we're going to be there for a bit because we know the city is just on fire. You know, we wear little earpieces from a radio. We can hear ambulance calls going off like crazy, fire calls going off like crazy, which by way of default means that police are also going crazy. Generally speaking, if one's nuts, the rest are too. Sometimes it's different. Like sometimes police are really busy and we're not, and vice versa. Like some things like that do happen. But for the most part, if one arm of the emergency services is busy, we're all busy. So we settled in. I was working on my documentation and, you know, trying to be as supportive to the family as I could be, because really there's not much else I can do at that point other than just sort of be an ear to talk to and maybe a vessel to pass along information of what's going to happen next. That's really all I can do at that point. So I was on scene and other family members started to arrive and they would ask to see the deceased, and we have to keep continuity of scene. We don't need people going in and moving the body or whatever. So we would accompany a person in, and so we have to be in the room when they're seeing and or saying or talking to the deceased, which can feel invasive at times. For me, it did anyway. I felt like an invader during those moments because I didn't really want to be around when somebody's grieving the loss of their loved one. But I also have to be able to hand over the scene appropriately to the police and let them know this is what happened. This is the thing. It's a shitty part of the job. I never liked it. I always hated it. I always felt like these people deserved privacy and they didn't need my, you know, my presence just standing awkwardly off into the corner of a room, kind of eyeballing them, watching what they were doing, you know, to make sure that you're not doing anything. Like it's not a fun aspect of the job. But as more family members started to arrive, conversations started to emerge and a family fight broke out. Not a fist fight, but like just an argument. And it all started with one sentence. Who's getting mom's car? That's what they were concerned about. A car. And then it spawned into, you know, who's going to sell the house? Who's going to move into the house? You can't move into the house because you're going to sell the house, but I want to move into the house. And it just, they were literally arguing about the superficial in the presence of their deceased loved one. Literally, the door was open. You could see the body from where these people were having their argument. And it was, and it became quite elevated and boisterous. And, you know, what I'm not exactly, it's not a threat to me at this point, so I can't say or do anything, or I shouldn't or didn't. Me and my partner Ryan just kind of stood off in the corner waiting for police. I got on the radio and asked when, you know, just said the scene is escalating a little bit. Can we get an ETA on 10-3s? Can we get police here, please? And, you know, it's not that the police just weren't coming. It's not they weren't coming because they didn't want to. They had nobody to send us. It was that busy. There was no one to send. So, I mean, it sucked. It really sucked. But I remember listening to the selfish nature and the self-obsessed, you know, wording of these people's arguments. And I remember just thinking, wow, like, you are horrible human beings. Just terribly horrible. And now, granted, I don't know what this deceased person was like in life. Maybe they were a monster. I don't know. That's not for me to judge. Just like it's not really for me to judge these people for reacting or doing whatever. I know that grief manifests in many different ways, and that it has many different forms. But I have also been around grief enough that I've seen those unique peculiarities of grief. And this was not grief. This was apathy. So, again, not for me to judge, but it's hard not to kind of have a feeling towards it when you're sort of stuck and immersed in it. You know, you're there. You're kind of just, all right, observing all of this. Not really cool. Don't want to. I mean, this was a life, you know, but like I said, I don't know the deceased, so I can't really pass you. But I remember it was just weird. It was a weird thing for me. And I remember going home feeling kind of odd about it. And that spawned our conversation into talking about people and how people are either inherently selfish or entitled, because we would come across that quite often. And like a lot of times we, like, for one, as a paramedic, I would show up and I would have people tell me what hospital they want to go to as though I'm just like a taxi service. And I'd be like, hey, the system doesn't work that way. I have to radio in with a CTAS score, the Canadian Trauma Acuity Scale. I have to do that. Then I get given a hospital based on, you know, the availability of room at said facility and the severity of your issue, which is zero at this point. And then people would be like, well, I'm not going to that hospital. And I was like, cool. So where do you, like, we can't take you anywhere else. And then there'd be this huge, like, what the heck? Why don't you guys just do your job? And I'm like, well, that's the thing. I am doing my job. I'm just not doing it according to you. And we would have things like that happen all the time. Or there was one instance where, because again, we started talking about really shitty people. And we went to this lady who hadn't been feeling well for, I think she said that it was about 2 weeks by the time we'd get, she said she hadn't been feeling well for 2 weeks. And the city again was on fire. And it was, I think, a Friday or Saturday evening. And so we asked this lady, do you want to go to the hospital? She says, yes. We're like, okay. So she stands up and walks into her room. And I assume she's just using the restroom. She starts packing a bag, which is fine. You know, I get it. You're going to the hospital. You want to pack some things. Cool. No problem. But then she goes into the kitchen and I assume she's grabbing meds. And I hear what sounds like a toaster being activated. And so my partner, Ryan, and I kind of look at each other and I round the corner into the kitchen. She's making some toast because the hospital food is awful. That's how emergent this situation is, that she has time to pack bags and make toast. Clearly not an emergency. And it wasn't. So we explained to her that, you know, we empathize with the fact that hospital food is shit. We get it. But at this particular point, you haven't been admitted anywhere. There's no guarantee that you're going to be staying overnight anywhere. We are also an emergency service. We should go. And so she, oh, yes, of course. I'm just going to have a smoke first. So I always hate it when people said that I'm going to have a smoke. I'd always say no. You know, if this is a 911 situation, you don't have time to smoke. I'm sorry. So she ignores our commands or our wording, or maybe advice, I guess, to not smoke. Starts up a cigarette anyway, and then our radio goes off, and about six blocks away from us, it's a call for a cardiac arrest of a seven-year-old that had drowned in a pool, a backdoor pool. And six blocks away from us, the next closest ambulance was coming from downtown. And we can't just clear from one call to the next. We don't get that. We can't do that. And we also just can't cancel one person because another call is more severe. We don't have that option. It's not for us. But this lady heard the call go off over my radio because I didn't have my earpiece in. So she heard the call come across my thing. And I swear to you, I can see this as plain as day in my eyes. She was sitting cross-legged on the stool that was in between the kitchen and the living room, threw out a shroud of cigarette smoke, kind of just swirling around her. And she said, oh, that sounds awful. And then she proceeds to smoke again. And so finally Ryan's like, it is awful. And there's no other ambulances available right now except for the one coming from downtown, and we're the next closest one. And she goes, oh, how come there's no ambulances? Not like, okay, hey, maybe I'm going to cancel. I don't want to go to the hospital. You guys go. No, just, oh, why is there no other ambulances? Well, because people like you call ambulances. That's why there's no other ambulances. That's what was going through my head. But of course I couldn't say that. So I hated this woman, still do. Not a big fan of knowing she exists. Wasn't in that moment. But he could relate. I mean, we talked about these kind of calls, these people, and it was nice. It's nice to kind of have that, I guess, echo chamber. I know that not all people are inherently bad. I get it. But it's nice because, you know, if I try to explain how annoying that is to a regular person, they may be able to conceptualize how kind of irksome that might be, or they might think that's shitty that person did that, because that's not what emergency services are. They kind of get that concept of it, but this guy really gets it. You know, like, this guy experiences it. You know, people can look at a steak, if you're a meat eater, they can look at it and be like, yeah, the steak's probably good, but unless you've eaten that steak, you know, there's a different level of empathy and comprehension there. So it's nice to have these conversations, you know, and of course our conversations morph in from just how the shitty things people do. And then I don't know why bars play news. Like, they're on one TV, it was CNN, and on the other TV, it was CP24. And on CP24, there flashed a picture of a bad motor vehicle accident, and it was for a drunk driver. A drunk driver had gone the wrong way on one of the major roads here in Ontario and gotten into an accident. And we started talking about drunk drivers and how, typically speaking, when we go to accidents involving drunk drivers, the intoxicated person is usually fine. It's everyone else that gets fucked up or dies. And that is, I don't know the true numbers, but I would say it's like a 90 percentile for the things that I went to that involved drunk drivers, the idiots that drunk drove. The number of times that I went to that and they were fine was astounding compared to the other people that were involved in it. There was the T-bone incident where, long story short, parents lived, kid didn't. Drunk also lived without a fucking scratch. The person was fine. And so we were kind of swapping stories back and forth. And I told him this story about we got called for a single vehicle rollover. Somebody had called it in. And so we drove to the scene, obviously. And we got there ahead of fire, and you can see this trail of debris in the kind of embankment off to the side of the right on the road, or in the ditch. It was just like glass, plastic, pieces of, you know, car, whatever was in his trunk, blah, 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 blah. And this car was about, you know, 200-300 meters away from the debris. You could follow it and get to the car, and the car was a wreck. The windshield was destroyed. It was a mess. The car was a complete write off. And we're scanning around. I shine my flashlight in the car. Nobody's in the car. I could smell alcohol, but I thought maybe it was just maybe some car fluids. You know, sometimes smells are weird. And I was shining around. I couldn't see anybody. I told Ryan, "Do you see anybody?" He's shining his light too. And then I hear Ryan talking, and there's a guy standing up on the embankment. And so Ryan's like, "Hey, you called the ambulance?" And he said, "Yeah." We're like, "Okay." So we go up the embankment, and I'm thinking this is the caller, like the, you know, somebody who had just come across this and called the ambulance. And then I realized there's no other cars parked along the road here. It's just our ambulance and then this crumpled mess. And then when I look at him, I notice he's got a little cut on his forehead. And I was like, "Were you in the car?" And then you look at him for 2 seconds, you could see he is obliterated drunk. And he's doing the wobble, and he's like hiccuping and slurring his way through whatever response. And he said, "Yeah." And I was like, "Oh, geez, okay. So tell us what happened." And so he starts explaining it, and basically what happened was this guy was a dumb fuck, drunk, fell asleep, rolled into the ditch. The thing is, he was ejected from the vehicle. So he showed us where he landed, and it was like 200 something, like, or like 100 feet or whatever. It was a distance. I'm not good at distances, but let's just, it was a good distance away. Probably like a good, in realistic terms, probably a good 5-10 feet of distance traveled from vehicle to, which is significant. It's not easy to fling a body, 5 or 10 feet. So I was like, all right, do you feel like we spinaled this guy, put him on the spine board, not a scratch other than that, like other than superficial stuff, right? But like other, like for real injuries, nothing. But if this fucking guy had hit somebody, like at the speed that he was obviously going, I shudder to think what would have happened. And that's the thing. So we got talking about people like that, and it's really tough to not get bogged down into the overgeneralization of people. Cause I know that, or I'm starting to know, I'm starting to learn that the people that I would see, the calls and the people that I would see on those calls, they're a small percentage of the general population. But even still, I'm trying to spin this positively. I think people suck. I do. I really, really, really do. It's hard not to. Especially with speaking with this gentleman too, he feels the same way. And we just echo chamber back and forth one another. But at the same time, it felt good. It felt really good to just release some stuff. To be able to get some stuff off, to have somebody to talk to that really gets it, because there's times where I can talk to my other friends that aren't first responders, and I can say something and I can see the glaze of kind of, nah, I don't really relate to that. That's fucked up. Actually, it's kind of weird. I don't know why you would think or go through that. That's so it's kind of nice to have that. You have that. It was a bro date, basically. It was a first responder bro date. It was nice. But obviously we didn't just talk about all the bad stuff. We talk about good stuff too. I remember I told him, and this is a completely random story, not a first responder story, but I told him a story, and I'm not going to name names, and I'm going to keep this completely ambiguous. I am a fly on the wall for this story. This is not me. I didn't do this. This is not something that I did, but this is... this is the beauty of being in the military. This story does take place back when I was in the Army. We're at the bar, as we are most nights, getting absolutely liquored drunk. And so we're sitting at the bar. Somebody orders a round of shots, which I hate those people. If you're one of those people that order shots at the bar, don't. Yeah, let's just do that going forward. So shots get ordered. We do the shots, and then... my buddy, I'm going to call him my buddy. That's what I'm going to say. My buddy. So my buddy, takes a shot, and you can see that it's not going down well. And the reason it's not going down well is because he's already had 6 shots throughout the evening. So of course it's not going down well. It's poison now. And you can see him struggling, and his body's like, man, you're going to puke. And you could see him about to puke. So he walks over to the bouncer and he says, "Hey, I got to go outside for some fresh air." The bouncer says, "Sure. But if you go out this way, you can't come back in. Like, you have to go back through the line again." And he's like, "Oh, I got to, and he's trying. He's like, and so we're like, "Well, he has a stamp, but it doesn't matter. Once you leave here, you have to go through the line, 'cause you have to go through security and stuff again." And so he's like, "Oh shit." So he goes upstairs to go to the bathroom, and unfortunately all the stalls are taken. Now I don't know why he thought of, I don't know why what happened next, I don't know why that was his go-to. Personally, I probably would have just puked in the sink. I've never puked in a bar. I'm lucky enough that that's never happened. But I personally, I probably would have chose a sink or maybe the garbage can. I would have chosen anything other than what he did. So my buddy had to puke, realized it was coming up quick. It was happening. So he literally kicked one of the stall doors and it opened. And there's a guy sitting on the toilet taking a shit. But my buddy pukes all over this guy that is just sitting trying to take a poop. Just sitting there taking a big creamy shit. And he gets puked on by this just random drunk guy who's now kicked in a door like a SWAT member. He pukes all over him. And my buddy, because I'm telling you all stuff that my buddy told us. My buddy looks up at the guy, realizes what has happened, and panics, thinking that this guy's going to tell on him. And for some reason, he decides that knocking him out is the best option. And so he knocks him the fuck out. I don't know why. I can't, and I don't condone this, by the way, but it's kind of, it happened, okay? I didn't do it. So my buddy comes downstairs, and he's explaining this to us, and we are fucking mortified. We're like, there is no, what? What? And then we see, because the bathroom is upstairs at this place, at this club, and we can see bouncers going up the stairs. We're like, oh, shit, dude, we got to go. We have to leave. Let's leave right now. So we start trying to round everybody up. We're there with our like whole course, our whole platoon. We're trying to round people up. And I look at the stairs and I can see bouncers bringing this guy who's got his pants around his ankles. And one bouncer's trying to pull his pants up. And this guy's protesting quite boisterously, but he's got puke all over. They're kicking this guy out of the bar because they think he passed out in the stall after puking on himself. I don't know. I don't know why I find it so funny. Oh, it was terrible. It wasn't good. I feel bad for that guy now, but at the time I was like, dude, I think we can stay. Yeah. Anyway, that was a random story at the end, but that was kind of how our conversation went. We arced, I guess. We talked about all these things and then, yeah, I started swapping funny stories about drunks. The number of times I've been puked on by drunk people is absolutely shocking. Never did I think that I'd be puked on this much in my life, but, you know, I'm not going to get into those stories. I think I've told a pretty good puke one today, so we're gonna leave it at that. Basically, what I'm saying overall is that it's nice to have those conversations, those shop talk conversations with somebody, because I don't get to have them very much anymore. You know, I don't have a partner on the ambulance, so I can't bounce things off of him that way. So it's kind of nice to be able to have someone to talk to. Today felt like I was sitting in the front of the truck again, and we were just swapping war tales with one another. And I miss that. It brings back some forlorn rumination. There's no conversations like the ones you have in the front of the truck. I'll tell you that right now. The things that happen in the front of the truck are astounding. We were on street side deployment. I'm going to do one more story before I go. We were on street side deployment on White Avenue, which is a big bar strip in Edmonton. It's just this long strip where bars are on either side of the street. A lot of university kids go down there because it's on the south side of the river, and that's where the University of Alberta is. And we're parked kind of on the in this little alleyway, and it's time. Like the people are starting to emerge from the bars, and we're like, yeah, these people are fucked. And these girls were coming by. One chick was eating a falafel, and she sees the ambulance, and so she comes up to the side, and I'm on the passenger side, and she fucking knocks on the window. So I cracked a little bit, and I was like, hello, can we help you? And she's like, she's chewing her food while trying to talk. So like pieces of onion and like celery and cream are just dripping down this poor girl's chin as she's explaining things, and landing on her chest. And she's like, looking down, trying to like use her finger to, yeah, it's hilarious. This girl was a hot mess. And anyway, she was basically asking us how we were. That was her. She just wanted to know how we were for the, how are you guys? I'm like, fine. We're good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's like, you guys are fucking hot. And so my partner, Mike, and I were fucking killing ourselves laughing. And this girl, she's like, do you guys like eggs? I'm like, what? Do we like eggs? She, yeah. I was like, sure, eggs are fine. You know, they're a decent breakfast selection. Yeah, of course. She goes, okay, hold on. So she's calling her drunk friend. Let's call her Becky. I like Becky for drunk friend name. So Becky comes over. She hands her falafel, and she comes stumbling back to the window. And she goes, do you guys like eggs? I'm like, Jesus, we've been over this. Yeah, eggs are fine, you know, versatile. You know, you can get omelet form, scrambled, sunny side up, whatever. And she goes, do you guys like these eggs? And she lifts up her shirt and presses her boobs against the window, thus flattening them out. So now this college girl's boobs are stapled to the side window of the ambulance. And Mike sits there laughing. I'm like, I can't look. I have my hand attached to the side of my face. I'm like, I can't right now. There's no way this is happening. That poor girl is going to regret that later in life. I'm sure of it. Oh, man. One more, just before I go. Remember how I told you I recently went on to online dating? I think I did. I reactivated my thing. Mistake. Terrible. To demonstrate the lack of mojo I have in comparison to the mojo other people have, let me tell you about the bus stop guy. So the bus stop guy was on White Avenue. He was passed out on the bus stop, and some girl was walking by and noticed that he did not look homeless, but he appeared to be lost and couldn't wake him up. So she called us, and we show up, and this guy is passed out on the bench. And he was gorked. He was hard to wake up and just reeked of stale booze and poor decisions. And finally, I do some pain stimuli to his nail bed, wake him up. And he sits up and he kind of looks around and he looks right up at me and he looks at my partner. He goes, well, you lads look fucking tall. I was like, I guess so. How are you, mate? Well, I'm fine, I guess. A little bit drunk, I think. Feel a little bit drunk. I think I had a little too much to drink at the bar tonight. I was like, oh, yeah, I would assume so. Where do you live? And he goes, well, Ireland. I was like, you live in Ireland, but where do you live here? He goes, no, I don't live here. I'm actually here visiting a friend, but I live in Ireland. So that's where I live. Okay. So where are you staying here? Well, at my friend's place, yeah. Okay, that much is... Where does your friend live? Lives in Edmonton. I was like, you are in Edmonton. Yeah, yeah, I'm just visiting my friend for a little while. So I realize I'm not getting anywhere very fast. At all. So I was like, okay, man, well, you know, we can't really leave you at the bus stop. Why don't you come with us to the hospital? We'll sort out kind of where you live from there, you know? Like, I can't just leave you on the street. Now, the girl that had called the ambulance was standing in proximity the entire time. And she must have heard this guy talk. And she comes over and she goes, you're from Ireland? He goes, yeah, no, just visiting a friend from Ireland. I'm here for about 2 weeks. But, you know, apparently I had a little too much indulgence tonight, you know. So little drunk now. Don't know how to get home. She goes, oh, well, do you know which direction it is? And he's like, well, I think... to be honest with you, loves, I don't. I think it's that way, I think. She's like, why don't you just come with me for now? This chick took this dude home. I've never picked a girl up at the bar in my entire life. Not ever. And I've tried. It's not for lack of trying. This dude passed out at a bus stop, woke up, got taken home by a girl. Insane. That's insane to me. How does that even happen? That's not a thing. That's not a thing. It's a thing, apparently. But not for me. Not for me. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to end it off. I had a great conversation with my friend. It felt like being back in the front of the truck, and that's something I miss. It's nice to be able to kind of connect and talk with somebody that kind of gets things. And it was good because we didn't really get into really heavy stuff. We didn't really talk about too many of the bad calls. So it was nice to just have a conversation with somebody that really gets it. So if you're in the front of the truck right now, not only do I envy you, but damn it, I respect you. Thank you for being in the front of that truck. Thank you for keeping us safe while we are at home, safe and warm within our homes. Thank you so very much. Be safe out there. Make sure you get home to your families. Much love and adoration for everything you guys do. Anyway, be safe, be well, and above all, keep talking to each other.